I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
The love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season, I'm so proud to say I've teamed up with Vichy. Vichy is an expert French pharmacy dermocosmetic brand. Doctor-founded Vichy has established the link between health and beauty and led the way in skincare innovation for 90 years. Powered by active ingredients, all product formulations are clinically proven, hypoallergenic and dermatologically tested for sensitive skin, making Vichy a pioneer in skin health science. Taking a holistic approach to skin health, Vichy is committed to provide safe and effective skincare routines for every skin type at every life stage. All Vichy products are available in local pharmacies nationwide.
Hello, what an episode I have in store for you today. I'm talking to Debs Walker. And before I tell you all about Debs, I just wanted to remind you that my show at the National Concert Hall on November 2nd is happening. We are so excited. This week we booked a musical group, I would say, for the night. So we're going to have some really soulful, beautiful live music. We've got our guests booked in. We're putting the show together and we are really excited. So if you bought tickets for that show all the way back in February 2020, I just wanted to let you know that your tickets are valid and the show is taking place on November 2nd. So I'll see you there. So Debs Walker, where do I begin? So I heard Debs' story last year. And I couldn't quite believe it. So Debs got in touch. She listens to my podcast. She lives in Texas. She's from Dublin. And she told me all about her story of how she found her baby boy at the side of the road in a car park 3 weeks after relocating to America with her family and her three small kids. I'm not going to say too much because I want you to go on a journey with this story today. But she's incredible. And I think we can all learn from her. Her amazing compassion for people. Her knowledge that she can share with us all. And I'm so happy that women like Debs exist in the world and tell their stories. And we can all learn from those stories. And that is the beauty of the Good Glow podcast. This is an uplifting, inspiring episode. And I hope you enjoy it.
Debs, I've been waiting so long to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much. Coming to us from a studio in Texas, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Georgie, for having me. It's such an honor for me to be part of your amazing podcast that I listen to over here in Texas all the time.
Oh, I'm so glad we got to connect. Your mom and my mother-in-law are really good friends. They're with each other all the time. And that's how I got to know your story. And I'm just so blown away by it. And we were talking during the week and you were sending me some voice memos and wow, what a journey and a story. Let's start with Texas. Why Texas? How did you end up there? And kind of what was the journey to that point?
Yes, honestly, the longer I'm here, the more random I think it is that we're in Texas. But honestly, the journey to even get here was, I suppose the word for it would be random. But I look back and I think, wow, all those pieces definitely fit together. You know, after I had our third baby in Ireland, I had very bad postnatal depression. And we were kind of on, I suppose, what you would call like a sabbatical. We were just taking a break from, Josh was working as a computer engineer. And we also did some youth work in Dublin as well. And then we had friends in the States who said, listen, come over here, just take a break, couple of months, and just get a way out of, you know, all the things that are, you know, kind of stressful and stuff. And so we went over to Michigan to literally next door to our friends.
How old were your kids at this point, Debs?
Okay, so Ellie was about, when we left, she was about 7 or 8 months, and I was still in the throes of postnatal depression. And then Sophie was 2.5. And so then Jack was 5.5. So, you know, they weren't kind of in the depths of school or anything. So it was an okay time to kind of get away. But dealing with all of that and moving and everything was, it was a big deal.
And you spoke to me about that postnatal depression and how every day you just wanted to be in a certain place doing a certain thing.
Yeah. You know, it came on, I had had two other children, never, I don't think had ever really had anything very significant, maybe a little bit of baby blues at the start. But then with Ellie, when she was born, I would say about 6 weeks afterwards, I just knew, I said to Josh one day, I looked in the mirror and I said to Josh one day, I think when I had her, I left myself in the hospital. And I think back about that and I'm like, it was amazing that I was able to express it like that, because I felt like a shell of a person. Like, I, thank God, I, instead of kind of rejecting her, I went the other way and I would not let a single person hold her except me. I mean, I literally held her all day and most of the night, to the point of ridiculousness where when we were in the car, I would hardly put her in the car seat. I thought she was safer being held by me, which is, a, you know, where the state of your brain is. But we would go, Jack would come home from, my oldest would come home from junior infants. And I would say to Josh, I have to go to Howth. I just have to go to Howth. And we would drive with the three kids and sit, and I would, and he would get out with the kids and I would literally just stare at the water in Howth. And just, I, to be honest, I don't even know why. I think I just needed something regular, a place that I loved to go. And of course, I know so much more now, but I know, you know, my hormones were all over the place. My chemicals were all over the place. And I would just cry and cry all the time. And it was really, really difficult, really difficult time.
So when you decided then to pick up and go to Michigan, how were your family, you know, did they think this was the right decision for you at that time?
You know, I would say, I think everyone was just like, what happened to her? You know, like I remember my sister-in-law saying to me, you know, I really thought we lost you. You know, you were here, but I thought we lost you. And so I think everyone at the time was just like, okay, if this is going to help, then, you know, maybe it is a good idea. And Josh was a computer engineer and so was able to work online and stuff, even back then, pre-COVID. And so was able to do kind of a little bit. And so, yeah, we were able to kind of take that step. But I think everyone, we thought at the time it was only going to be 3 months. And so, you know, we never knew all the twists and turns that were going to happen. So, you know, 3 months is kind of like, okay, go there, have a little bit of time off, get better and come back, which is 100% what we thought we were doing as well.
So why Texas?
So when we were in Michigan, which was with friends in Michigan, we started kind of after the first six weeks, I was starting to be better. I was on medication at that point, like for postnatal depression, which I'll just say, just in case there is someone listening, I was initially resistant to that. I just was like, oh, it'd be grand, you know, I can kind of think my way out of this and go for walks and get the serotonin up and do all those kind of things. And it really did get to the point where that was something that, you know, the doctor was like, listen, we really need to do this. So, you know, I was kind of spiraling, and it wasn't long term, but I'm glad that I did it.
It's, I think, you know, like you say, if there's anybody listening, I think it's really important to take the help when it's offered, whatever that may be.
Yeah. It really, really is. And, you know, I, like I said, I think I know, I understand more now, especially about postnatal stuff. I wish I had known kind of about the hormone dips and all the different things going on. But my doctor was amazing. I had a lovely kind of physician's assistant nurse practitioner who was helping me as well. She was wonderful. And I would just bawl my eyes out, and she would just be like, it's going to end, it's going to end. So 6 weeks into the time in Michigan, I was starting to kind of, you know, I suppose things were kind of coming back together for me. And both Josh and I separately, and we never said it to each other. It was so funny when we think about it now. We never said it to each other. Both of us separately started thinking, like, is this kind of a period of time to, like, leave Ireland? Now, I want to tell you, I never, ever, ever wanted to leave Ireland. Josh is his parents are American. And so everyone used to always be like, we met in school. And so everyone was always, oh, you're going to live in America. You're going to. And I was like, I will never live in America.
And what do you think it was? What happened to make you both think maybe our future is here?
You know, we were doing youth work in Dublin at the time. And at the time, there was lots of changes with that. There was lots of different kind of things happening with that. And I honestly don't know. I think we both had a sense that there was just, it was kind of a transition time. And so we started thinking about it. We both started praying about it, and separately just kind of were like, yeah, like, I think, you know, maybe this is the time. The kids are small. Josh has an American passport as well. And so we're like, we could do this while the kids are small, thinking that we would go back to Michigan. And years previous to that, we had done kind of an exchange, like our youth group in Dublin had done an exchange with this youth group in Houston, an Irish guy in Houston, actually. And so we started thinking, oh, like, maybe we should chat to him and see. So we started talking with him and looking at Houston as maybe a possible place to go. And the more I think about it, honestly, even talking about it here, I'm just like, it's so funny. It's just so funny. But the things that came afterwards that I know we're going to talk about, like, I look back and I think, oh my goodness, if we hadn't chosen to do that, the whole of the rest of our lives would not have happened. And that's so sad and scary, you know? And so I don't know. I feel like we were both led to just kind of be like, listen, we're going to pick up, we're going to do this. We don't know for how long. And so we went home to Dublin from Michigan, and that was in the summer. And we were kind of chatting to family and friends and stuff and being like, listen, we think we're going to go to Texas. And everyone's just like, you're literally mad. Like, you have three small kids. And it was a time, it was back in the time. So that was now 16 years ago. And it was when things in Dublin were really intense, as far as like Celtic Tiger, buying houses in Dublin was ridiculous. Like, Josh has a master's from Trinity in computer engineering. He's very employable. I was a teacher, but still, it was really, really hard at the time. And so we were just like, do you know what? Even if it's just for a year or two, we could just go. And we're both a bit adventurous like that, I suppose. You know, we're just like, we'll just drag the kids across the world.
Can you remember that first night in Texas?
Yeah. We went, I can. We turn up with the kids and we went to stay. We were staying with the friends who did the youth work in Texas as well. And he's originally from Dublin, but was, you know, had been there a long time. And, you know, the kids were small and it was kind of jet lag and it all felt very adventurous and, but really kind of open-ended, like, wow, I wonder what this is going to look like.
So you said that, so did you start volunteering then as soon as you got to Texas?
We did. We did. So those friends that we were staying with, they did a lot of kind of volunteering and stuff as well. And friends of theirs had a charity that works in downtown Houston, and they work with the homeless community. And so every Wednesday night. They have, you know, they feed the homeless. They have church. They, it's all outside. And so, you know, it's just like drug dealers coming up and gang people coming up and everyone smoking and taking drugs. And, you know, it's not like church in a building. This is like outside. And then there's like a little area where some of the mums would bring their little kids to get minded while they, you know, got their dinner, and they get free nappies and they get free clothes and shoes and that kind of stuff for the kids. So we were volunteering down there, honestly. So we got there in the early September and, you know, started volunteering pretty quickly. And we had the other kids with us at the time. Like, they would come down with us, which is Cass.
You had so much on. You just moved country. You've got three kids. Like, no one would blame you for staying at home and watching the telly when they go to bed. And there you are volunteering. What do you get from that?
You know, we both are people who have faith. And so we both would see, I suppose, the value in humans, and so in other people, and know that like those people deserve to be seen and known and loved and recognized for their humanity. And I was honestly beyond shocked when I went down there and I just saw, because, you know, at home there in Dublin, there's help like social services and stuff like that for people. And I know people are still living in very, very difficult situations at home. I can't describe over here, like, there just isn't the same kind of social services. Even like a, you know, when we have babies and there's a healthcare, you know, the nurse would check up on you. There's nothing like that. It's just harder for people to even get any help and stuff like that. And so going down there and seeing just hundreds and hundreds of homeless people and mums with little babies, and, you know, even volunteering down there, like, we'd go out at night and be like in the areas where, you know, kind of be like homeless girls, but they're prostituting and stuff, and they'd have their babies and be selling drugs from the buggy. And just really, really hard. And so, yeah, I suppose like just knowing people's value and being like, gosh, these people really deserve so much more than this. So we love it. Yeah, we do. We really love it.
Oh, that's such an amazing thing to do. And thank you so much for painting such a picture of what it's like. I'm sure it was so tough at times to see people suffer. Like, of course, it's so much easier to turn your head the other way. But like you said, like, just to acknowledge that these people are people and to get in there and help them is just incredible.
You know, I always tell, we actually have interns that come from all over the world to work with us here in Houston now. And I always tell them, when you see a homeless person or when you see, you know, someone living in a difficult situation, remember that someone's baby. That was somebody's little baby, and they had hopes for them and they had dreams for them, and life just kind of, you know, or even the circumstances that surrounded them while they grew up. You know, Josh always says, like, it's literally just the grace of God that we're not in those situations, and the families we had around us, you know. And so it is like our environments can kind of lead us one way or the other.
So tell us about that day that changed your life forever.
Yeah, so we're down, it was mid-October, so it's boiling here still, and we're serving food. And I looked over to the other side of the parking lot, and I saw kind of a little bundle, and the childcare area is kind of over to one side, but this was on the other side. And I wasn't quite sure, kind of, I went over and I picked up, and there it was, like a little baby. Now, mums were, you know, like I said, mums would bring their babies for, you know, to be taken care of, but this wasn't over in the little childcare area. And just on the chair, and so picked it up and just opened up the little bundle, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, where is mom? Like, thinking that someone is going to kind of keep an eye on the little baby or whatever. And so he's there, little tiny boy, little fuzzy hair and skin, Georgie, as raw can be. I just tell people, honestly, it's like as if someone got a little cheese grater and just took the top layer off the skin. And I'd no idea what that was. And he wasn't crying, but he was kind of visibly distressed. Kind of found out later, you know, that the crying kind of ends, you know, if the crying doesn't get a response. They kind of don't really bother crying that much anymore. So he wasn't crying, but he was very hungry and thirsty and hot because he was wearing like blankets around and it was probably 30 degrees, maybe more.
I'm sure your mind was racing, but what's going through your mind? Obviously, you're trying to look around.
Yeah, like I was looking for mum. So there's some of them kind of would go around the corner, couldn't see anyone. And so I called one of the people who obviously had more experience with that kind of stuff. The lady who's in charge called her over. And I was like, listen, will I go over to Walgreens, which is like Boots or something, you know, run over across the road and get something to wipe him down because I didn't know what it was, but he'd mold under his armpits and he'd mold under his chin and in his ears and behind his legs and all that kind of stuff. And do you know when you're in those crazy situations and you only really think of it afterwards? I think I thought more about it afterwards. In the moment, it was very kind of like, we'll get him a bottle and we give away formula and stuff like that. So I was able to, you know, just get some formula, start feeding the poor little thing. And he's drinking, and then still thirsty, but then throwing it up because he's drinking too fast. You know, that long term, that took a while to kind of retrain, but drinking and everything. And then I went over to get something and to clean him up and everything. And in that time, biological mum came back and they're kind of chatting to her and just saying, listen, he is not doing well. Like, this is not a good situation. And she had kind of left him there because she was like, well, there probably wasn't a major thought process in it, but probably, listen, they're there and I'm just going around the corner kind of thing. Mm. And there, I don't think there was very much thought going into the general care anyway. And so they're kind of chatting to her and saying to her, listen, we're going to have to call, it's called Child Protective Services here. And, you know, I know more about her now and these situations. And so I do really understand, you know, she really did not want that to happen. And because that was her reality growing up, was that she had grown up in the system and had a very, very, I mean, her story is absolutely horrific of growing up in the system and in and out of different places and abuse and all of that. And so I really, you know, I say this to everyone, I have to really honor her because as you hear more of this story, it's very easy to kind of, you know, be like, oh my gosh, she's so terrible. I can't believe she did that. But when they grow up in these cycles of poverty and lack of education and lack of support, you know, like we have mums and mother-in-laws and aunties and all different things giving us advice. And when we have babies and, like I said, public health nurses and stuff. And if you're living on the streets and don't have that support system and mentally you're kind of stuck as a child because you've been traumatized, you know, it's like a little child bringing up a baby, you mm-hmm. know. And so she really believed that once a day for feeding was fine. So he was 3 months old and had been fed once a day for 3 months. And I'd say the formula was probably watered down as well. And then had also, she was kind of saying like, oh, he sucks his hands a lot. And we were saying like, well, you know, he's probably hungry. He's trying to suck his hands. And she was like, oh, well, I was trying to stop him doing that. So I was like putting hot sauce on his hands so that it would kind of pull his hand back out of his mouth, and hot sauce on the soother. And then what we found out later is that the skin was so red because he had scabies. So, so bad. And I'd never had experience with scabies before. I didn't really know about it. It's kind of little dirt fleas that go into the skin and they kind of make like a little nest, I suppose, under the skin, and then they all come up together. Oh, he was just covered and rubbing his little legs, like rubbing, trying to, you know, itch himself or whatever.
Oh my God. It's a lot to take in, isn't it? Just the way, you know, you're describing his condition is so upsetting. And of course, I think it's lovely the way you speak about his mother with compassion, because of course we can all have compassion for her and what she must have been going through herself. Mm. So what unfolded then in those few minutes after you came back from the pharmacy?
So when I was over there, they were obviously, like I said, talking to her about this is what's going to happen, you know, and she was distressed. And then she said, look, what about the lady with the funny accent? So I always think like it's so funny that my Irish accent is what changed the course of my life. But what she said, well, why doesn't she just take him? And so I come back across the road and they're all kind of looking at me and they said, look, because the thing is here, legally, you are allowed to do that. Like, honestly, it's kind of initially was like legal babysitting. You know, like I could take Pia for a few days and you could say, you know, but this was like she was saying, can she mind him while I kind of, you know, get myself together and stuff. And but it was done with paperwork. So it would be done with a like, I, this person say that Josh and Debbie can, you know. And so it was done kind of like that. But I'm kind of ringing Josh being like, so do you know the way we've three small kids at home?
You're literally on the phone to him in the parking lot.
Yeah. I was so gassed. And actually, we talked about it and then I didn't actually take him that night. She went back to where she was staying with him, and they have here like a Mother's Day Out, it's called. It's kind of like a little play group, and it's free for mums who, like the charity runs it for mums who, you know, are living homeless. And so they said, you need to bring him tomorrow and we'll get it all organized and everything. And so Josh was amazing. I mean, he was just like, listen, there's no choice with this. You know, we're not going to say like, no, sorry, you were too busy or whatever, you know. So just kind of going back to the postnatal stuff, like I was very content with three children. Like I wasn't like, oh my gosh, you know, I need more children. But I had made the decision because of how bad the postnatal was that I wasn't going to have any more children myself.
Right.
And so I hadn't thought, well, then I'll just go and foster or adopt a child. You know, I think when you're small, you always think you'll do that, you know, and so I'd had it in my head once. But yeah, and neither did Josh. You know, it wasn't like we kind of came to America thinking that this would be something we would do, but we were both really open. And like I said, I suppose because of the heart that we have and the faith that we have, we were like, well, this person deserves what we can give him for the time that we're able to give it for, you know. And honestly, we thought it would be like maybe 2 months, because there are services that mums can do, like parenting classes and, you know, anger management and all these different things. And so we kind of thought that was the way that mum would go. And so the next day after the Mother's Day Out, I arrive home with a baby, and all he had was a nappy with mold in it and a bottle with mold in it, and that was it. And I think he had a vest on, like there was no little bag or nothing. And Ellie was 2.5, maybe 3. Yeah, she was probably nearly 3 at that time. And so I was just like, okay, we literally don't have a bed. One of our neighbors gave us like a travel cot, you know, the little pack and play thing. So we used that, and then loads of, you know, our different friends that we had met within like the month that we had been here started collecting things. And I have to say about here, honestly, the most generous people, lovely, kind, generous people. I had more for him than I ever had for any of my other babies in Ireland.
What did you say to your kids?
We said that his biological mum wasn't well, and that, you know, that we were going to mind him while she was kind of getting better or whatever. And they were so small that they were kind of like, oh, okay. They're probably thinking, well, you've dragged us halfway across the world anyway, so okay. But they were fine.
Were you terrified that you'd fall in love with this little baby and then have to give him back?
Yes. Absolutely. I was. And we've actually had since then about 14 different little ones in the house. And yeah, you do. That is a big thing. And it is something that people say to me all the time about fostering. Actually, they say, I would love to do it, but what if I fall in love with the baby and have to give it back? And honestly, from my experience, I would say to that, like, it isn't about us. It's actually about the baby, because what we can give to them, whether it's for 2 months or 6 months or a year, yes, it will break our hearts if, you know, if and often when they go back to a maybe a hard situation. But what we've given them is maybe invaluable for the rest of their lives. And my kids, now that they're older, Sophie was writing her essay to, you have to write essays to get into university in America here. And one of her essays talked about how just the different life situations that we had been in working with people in poverty. And she was saying, like, her heart has been broken, but maybe it's good to stay broken, you know, like, we should have a broken heart in that way. And so I think it's been really beneficial for our kids just to be around all of it.
I'll get straight back to my conversation with Debs. But first, I wanted to thank Vichy for supporting the Good Glow and tell you all about their new hero product, Mineral 89 Probiotic Serum. I've been using this over the past few months and I absolutely love it. Recently, through working with Vichy and speaking to their skincare experts, I learned that stress can actually affect our skin and how it looks. Over the past few years, I've certainly learned about the importance of de-stressing. So what can we do for our skin? Well, Vichy's new Mineral 89 Probiotic Serum targets acutely stressed skin and supports the repair of skin barrier damage. Mineral 89 Probiotics is proven to visibly improve dullness, elasticity, stress lines, and overall radiance for the recharge of stressed skin needs. It's dermatologist tested, hypoallergenic, and fragrance free. It can be used every morning and night after cleansing your skin before your moisturizer. For a 20% Mars Pharmacy discount on Mineral 89 Skin Booster and Mineral 89 Probiotic Fraction Serum, use the code GOODGLOW20 online only at mars.ie until November 30th.
So you get your gorgeous baby home, and did he have a name or did you name him?
He had a different name. He did have a different name. I won't say it just so it's not kind of out, but he did have a different name. And we, at the time, were kind of calling him that name. And then we both felt like, I feel like that's kind of another, I don't know. We just started calling him the baby and little guy and kind of all different things. The name he had was kind of random. So yeah, and it wasn't until a little bit later that we gave him, his name is Isaiah, so it wasn't until later that we gave him this name. His middle name is Andrew, which is actually Josh's middle name as well. So, but you know, when he came home, I just remember one, you know, thinking, okay, this is so different to when you birth a child yourself. You're not dealing with, I was dealing with a lot of health issues with him, but I wasn't dealing with the hormones and the feeling, you know, sore and all those kind of things. So honestly, I felt like I had more mental and emotional energy to give to him, even though he was in kind of a hard situation. So he also had RSV. It's like a kind of lung condition that he was quite premature, that we found out later. But so he had to have a little air mask, like a nebulizer, quite a lot. And then the skin thing, I had to wrap him in towels and then boil those towels. And actually the kids weren't allowed to touch him, which was hard because of the scabies. And then it took me about a week to find a doctor for him, because it's just tricky here. He was on the Medicaid, which is kind of the free healthcare, and not all doctors take it. And, you know, that was kind of just a cultural thing I didn't understand. And so it took a week for me to get him treatment for the skin, actually, which was hard, because he was so, oh my gosh, he was just rubbing his little legs all the time.
The poor little thing. Yeah. And did he settle well with you?
He really did. Like I said, you know, and now that I've had a good number of little babies from hard situations, the crying is not hard to deal with because they don't cry for very long because they haven't been responded to. And so he was very good little baby. He loved eating, obviously, because it took me a while to get him to just take just the bottle that he was supposed to take, because he was always like waiting for more. But very good little baby, very peaceful, like lovely, kind of started then to have like good eye contact. And we just... you just absolutely fall head over heels. I mean, he's so cute. Like, he was so cute, even with all his little issues going on and everything, just so, so cute and lovely. And yeah, and the kids were just adoring, and Josh loved him. And it was very quick. It was very quick to fall in love.
What was the phone call like to your mom to tell her what had happened?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I can't remember how we started telling everyone at home. I suppose they probably at this point thought we were pure mad anyway. So, you know, we were kind of more telling it as like we're minding this baby more so than, you know, what happened later. So it was kind of in stages. So I don't think anyone initially was like, oh, goodness, like, wow, this is, you know, a big life change. It was kind of like, well, yeah, they're kind of into that, you know, all that stuff anyway. So we were kind of just minding this baby.
And so it obviously then turned into a more of a permanent situation.
Yeah, so that was October, and then just before Christmas, there was kind of a Christmas event down for the people experiencing homelessness downtown, and we're all down there, and the biological mum came up and was talking to me, and she said, which I always think is such a funny statement, she said, do you know that baby that you have? And I just think, like, as if I would be like, oh, wait, no, what? And so I was like, yeah. And she said, you know, and again, I just really honor her. She's like, I can't do it. I know I can't do it. And I really think that he would have a better upbringing with you. And she said to me, will you adopt him? Which I think is such a gift, you know? And I just think, like, I was kind of standing there, like, at the time, Josh, like I said, his American passport, I was on a green card. And so, you know, I didn't even know how long we were staying here or anything. And I was like, I had wanted to, you know, because like I said, we were so in love with him. And the thought of bringing him back was just like, my whole life is going to fall apart. And I remember I talked to her and I said, we're very open to that. Let's see, you know, what the process is and stuff. And I walked around to the back of a van. There was a van there. And I was like doing this kind of like, you know, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. Like, and then I went to talk to one of the people who's in charge. And I was like, OK, what, like, what is even the process? So we actually had to go through, obviously, there's a massive amount of paperwork and you have to have a caseworker and they do a home study and make sure you're not crazy. And then, you know, all the legal things and everything, it took a good while. But all the while, you know, it's what she wanted. It really is what she wanted. And it's what she wanted for him. And, you know I keep saying it, but I just think it's so lovely because I see children who don't get, you know, into a different situation, and a mum can't do it and is trying, but, you know, it kind of perpetuates the cycle. And I don't think that all children should be taken at all. I really don't think that. We're a lot of what we do is actually supporting mums mm-hmm. and dads to keep their children and to parent them. And, you know, but in situations where it's really, really not viable, then I do think it's a wonderful option.
Yeah. And it was she a young mother, Debs?
She was. Yeah. She was. Yeah. She was late teens at the time.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just so hard, you know?
So this then became more permanent, and you became a mother of four then at this point.
Yeah. So just I was, you know, sometimes I see like the kids have, you know, all been in the same school system kind of growing up. And I was at a basketball game, Isaiah's basketball game there last night. And one of the mums who my oldest Jack played with her son, she said, "Oh my gosh, I remember Isaiah in the little car seat when you just randomly turn up with him at one of Jack's basketball games. And you're like, this is our new baby, you know?" And she was like, we were all just like, "Oh my goodness, you know?" And so, yeah, suddenly there's no build up. Sometimes obviously people have a pregnancy or you're waiting to adopt or you're waiting for surrogacy or you're in a process. We had zero process. It was like one day to the next. So it was like, okay, here we are. So it was kind of a processing afterwards.
And I think though, when you believe in something higher, so if you, you know, trust the universe or you have faith and you pray, then almost you go with the flow because you're like, it was all supposed to be this way.
Exactly. Exactly. That is so much of like, this is obviously why we came here. This must be why we're here. So, you know, when there's days when I'm like, oh, you know, why my kids didn't grow up in Ireland, they don't know how to speak Irish, which at what point was that important to me? Not really, but I kind of think that. And then I think, oh goodness, if we hadn't made these choices, we wouldn't have Isaiah. And I don't want to know my life without him, to be honest.
And did you feel then once you adopted Isaiah that you couldn't leave Texas?
Yeah, it took, that process took almost 2 years, and the kids were established in school. And then we were very much established as far as like what we were doing. Josh was actually still doing kind of computer engineering stuff online, but we were, that process with Isaiah and helping his biological mom in her situation really opened us up to the cycles of poverty that people are living in. And we started kind of doing a lot more volunteering and stuff like that, and then subsequently ended up starting our own charity. And so it wasn't a conscious like, oh, we're deciding to stay here. It was just like over time, like we started, we had some friends from Ireland who came over to work with us, and I don't know, everything just kind of snowballed and here we are, we're still here.
Tell us about your charity.
Yeah, so we have a charity, it's called Seven More, and we work with people, men and women, who are living in cycles of poverty. And then one of those cycles, one of the main parts of it, one of the cycles is that we notice that a lot of low-income people are cycling in and out of the prison system all the time. And so they go in, they're arrested for kind of minor crimes. I'm sure people at home have even read or, you know, watched Netflix documentaries about it all. And then they're coming out and it just wrecks the family kind of unit. They have a hard time getting jobs afterwards and stuff. And so we had been in the homeless community working and helping, and then in low income neighborhoods as well. And like I said, we bring in interns from Ireland actually, and all over the world, and they college students, like, and they'll come work with us. And so we do, like, we're in low income neighborhoods doing like English classes and community development. And then started kind of going down to the inner city because it was some homeless people who were in prison that we were visiting told us that when they come out, you know, they're let out in this place. And the only thing I can, you know, they're basically, it's a bus station in the middle of Houston. Literally surrounding it is drug dealers and traffickers. And I'll send you a photo one day, Georgie, and you'll see when I drive down there every day, there's just people strung out on drugs lying all over the road, like literally just, it's carnage. And so then they let all the prisoners out right there, and they're wearing their prison clothes. So they look like prisoners. They have a red potato sack full of everything they own, and they're wearing prison shoes. And so they're just, you know, a sitting duck for people to be like, do you have somewhere to go? Do you need a job? Do you want drugs? Do you want this? Do you want that? And they just get dragged straight back into the life because you're so vulnerable. They're so vulnerable when they come out. you know, they're just, if they've been in a long time, like we've some men who, you know, they've been in 47 years. It's the longest guy I had, 47 years and nothing and no one. And then I have the young guys as well who kind of come out thinking, you know, they're all hard and everything. And then they're straight back in. And so we meet them and we give them food, phone calls, free phone calls. We give them socks and shoes and t-shirts and then help them kind of, they get a wristband from us with a, like one of those rubber wristbands with our phone number on it. And so they can call us anytime for help. We have kind of a helpline. And so we help them like get job training, next steps help, family help, all that kind of stuff.
And your charity, Seven More, why did you call it that?
So it's Josh is really into numbers. Josh has, like I said, masters in computer engineering and maths. And he loves numbers. And there's a verse in the Bible that talks about not just forgiving seven times, but seven times 70. And we just felt like there's people who think that these people deserve what they get. And so when they come out, you know, they're kind of just the dredge of society, you know, like, well, they did time. And so, you know, should they get a job and should they whatever? And we really feel like as many times as they need, as many times as someone can speak life over them and speak good, the next season can be better and all of that. If it's seven times or if it's seven times 70, then that's it.
That's incredible. So tell me about Isaiah now. Did he always know where he came from?
So he's the most fabulous little guy. I say little, he's massive. He's like really muscly and he's an amazing sports I don't know what word you would use, but he's incredible at sports. I had great hopes of him playing rugby for Ireland, but he's had a couple of concussions, so we're probably veering away from that. But he also, when he was small, I didn't say this actually, his head for his first year was like one side of muscles was very long and one side was short. So he was actually crooked because mum believed that picking a baby up spoiled a baby. And so that's why there was the mold and all of that kind of stuff. So it's actually very miraculous that his neck is straight. Yeah. We did physio and all that kind of stuff. And he's just physically amazing. Such a nice person. But I'll tell you this about his personality. He's the most in the moment person I have ever met. He is right there today. He doesn't care about yesterday and he's not thinking about tomorrow. And that has, what we see with that is that he does not care to talk about his story at all. So okay. He doesn't mind us talking about it. So we'll say to him, you know, is it okay if we chat about it? He doesn't, he's like, you can talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. And sometimes I'll say to him, do you have any questions about anything, you know, if you want to talk about any part of your story? And he's like, I don't know why you keep asking me that. I don't know why I would have to have a question. And I don't know if that's just boys or, you know, we do kind of upkeep classes for our licensing and for foster care. And the psychologist is like, listen, he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't need to talk about it. He's happy and secure and he's not showing signs of being stressed by it. So when it's time, he'll talk about it. But right now, it's actually so funny because I have friends whose kids are adopted and they ask loads of questions and I'm ready. I'm like really ready with the story, you know, but he's just like, no.
Oh, I suppose it is nice to be present. And like when you were saying there, like he doesn't think about yesterday and doesn't think about tomorrow. It's like, oh my God, if I could live like that, I'd be happy.
I mean, seriously, now it doesn't bode well for exams, you know, where there's an exam in 3 days. So we're working on that. But no, it does. It is a lovely quality. Like he's very content in the moment and he's not thinking too far ahead and he's just happy with where we're at today.
That's so good to hear. Debbie, when we first started chatting, you mentioned, you know, raising a black son. Do you mind me asking what the differences are there in terms of your life in Texas and his life in Texas?
Yeah. You know, especially over the last couple of years, there's been way more talk about that. There's some practical things from when he was small, like just the basic hair care, I obviously had not one clue what to do. And that was kind of a growing thing. But I have friends who were able to help me and kind of learn that kind of thing. And I have to say, for living here in Texas in the South, we haven't had a lot of difficult situations. He himself now... stuff might have been said to him and he hasn't picked up on it. I don't know. But he's never, we ask him, you know, has there ever been anything said or anything? And he's like, no. And he has lovely, lovely friends, very mixed group of friends. We haven't had anything. But I will say, as a mum, he just started driving. So he's 16 and he just started driving in July. And every time he goes out, it is just a different experience for me than when my other children started driving here. He's a very good driver. He did an extra class just in what to do if you're stopped by the police, like how to behave and be respectful and, you know, where to put your hands and how not to move your hands and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, I never even thought about that for my other kids. So there is things like that. And then I know that most likely as he gets older, like I was saying to someone recently, when he was small, everybody, you know, you see pictures of him when he was small and everyone's like, he's so cute and he's so this and he's so that. And I just wonder myself, like when the change happens to when they go from being so cute and cuddly and everything to people being suspicious of them, you know, like, and when they, you know, go into a shop maybe and, this is just experiences that I've read about and other people have said, you know, if you go into a shop and you have your hood up or something and then you get followed around the shop by security or, you know, different things like that. And I don't want to kind of overstate it because we haven't had any situations, but I also don't want to underplay it because it is a reality that we've had to learn about and understand and we want to support him in it. We don't want him to kind of walk around with a chip on his shoulder thinking this, something is going to happen and I should have an edge to me. We don't want that, but we want him to be aware that the possibility of someone mistaking you for someone else is a reality. Or, you know, you do just have to be a little bit more respectful and a little bit more careful and just a little bit more all the things, you know. And so I think us being Irish actually helps a little bit. Just generally, I think we're a different culture as well. And so, you know, I've told him his whole life he's Irish, you know, so I'm always like, well, you're just Irish anyway, so it's grand. We're working on his Irish passport. It's a little bit, there's some tricky kind of old Irish laws to do with adoption, which are silly, but we're working on that.
And you did a TED talk and your life has gone in this direction that you never imagined. You know, when you wake up every day, do you feel like you're living a life with purpose?
I do. Yeah, our lives are very kind of adventurous and, like I said at the start, random. We really love what we do. You know, there's times when, and you know, when the kids moan that we don't have, you know, all the money in the world and, you know, all the things that if we had more normal kind of regular jobs. But we do get to see amazing things. We get to travel a fair bit. Like we work, we speak at youth conferences around the world. This next weekend we'll be in Serbia, speaking in a doing a youth camp in a refugee camp actually for Afghan refugees.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we get to travel a lot. We get like we feel like we have real purpose and understanding of who we are and why we're here, you know.
I'd like to talk about God wings from time to time, and I think you're the perfect guest to ask about your last God wink and when that was.
I'd say our last God wink was maybe honestly like this trip to Serbia, because we weren't sure if we were going to be able to go because of COVID. We weren't sure if we should because of COVID. We weren't sure if Isaiah should come because of school and all those kind of things. And we just said, okay, we're just going to start kind of pursuing it. And every single thing just kept kind of popping into place. And so the three of us are going, me, Josh and Isaiah are all going, and he's going to like serve the refugees as well. He's going to be washing their clothes and serving them tea and doing games and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that'll be so valuable for him. And so, yeah, that would be something that I'm like, yeah, that was definitely God just being like, yes, go do that.
That's incredible. And is he interested in that sort of like giving back, like yourself and Josh, the kind of, you know, the direction that your life has taken? Does he get interested in that?
Yeah, he's very, very kind-hearted, very, very sweet. Like we have a little boy whose mom is, she is parenting him, but it's kind of hard for her. And he comes to our house sometimes, and Isaiah is really good with him. Like he plays with him and minds him and whatever. And this week we've been talking about like, what is a refugee? What does it mean? What happened to them and all that kind of stuff. He's not like really kind of like, let's have big chats about it and let me, you know, get really deep. But when he's there, he'll be wonderful with them. Yeah. And all of our kids, our older kids are wonderful as well. Like they've lovely hearts for people. And I think just like I said, like being in all these kind of hard situations and having to even let some of the other kids go that have been in the house have been really good for them to just have an understanding of like who they are as people as well and their purpose.
Oh, Debs, I'm in awe of you and the person you are. And oh, like you know, this week, just thinking about this conversation and hearing your story in full the other day. And I just feel so lucky that I get to hear stories like this and bring these stories to my audience. Like, it's such an honor to hear you speaking. You need to write a book. You need to do something like that, because you've got so much to say and so much to give. And you've given so much of your life. And thank you so much for everything that you've done and for sharing your story with me today.
No, Georgie, thank you. I honestly, like, I think it's so beautiful what you've done since having breast cancer, and then how your life, like how you're getting people to be healthy, even like mentally and physically and all of those kind of things. And even sharing all of these stories, like you're amazing. I just have loved your podcast and loved all of it. Even I actually follow Rachel Gary. And when she was on, I was like, oh, you just honored her story so well. It was lovely.
Oh. Oh, I love Rachel Gary. And Debs, do you share much of your life online if people want to follow you?
Yeah. So my own Instagram is Debs_, just Debs_ and then _. And then 7more is 7more stories, the number 7more stories on Instagram as well.
Okay, brilliant. I'm sure you'll have people getting in touch trying to send their kids over on an internship next summer.
Yeah, for real. Come on, send them. Contact me. I'd love to talk to people. Irish people. It helps me keep my accent the more Irish people come over.
Yeah, you've certainly kept it. God, you never know. Maybe I should book a flight over to Texas and come hang out for a while. But
you can teach me how to be more healthy. I need you.
You're glowing. Thank you so much, Debs. Wow. I loved every second. I loved every second of this. Thank you for your time.
Me too. Thank you, Georgie. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Good Glow podcast, brought to you with thanks to Vichy. If you did, please feel free to leave me a review and subscribe. As I said at the start of the podcast, there is a very small amount of tickets available for my National Concert Hall show on November 2nd, available over on nch.ie. I'll see you next week.